Hello everyone and welcome back to the Smashy Business Show after a long, long break. And today is Monday, June 9th, 2025, and I'm Abdul Majid Awan.
And I'm Warid Ahmed, and we've got a packed show for you today. We're going to be discussing how allegedly turning Qatar's jet into Trump's Air Force One could cost $400 million. Secondly, Huda Beauty is donating 1 million dirhams in charity, and she's allowing people to choose a cause that they want. To mark the Eid celebration and her taking solo ownership of Huda Beauty. And supposedly, the UAE has helped the U.S. shape their crypto rules, according to the Circle president. And finally, Zara's Russia exit was actually set up for a comeback, according to the Financial Times.
The very first story after we came back from Eid. It was a long holiday, but finally we're back. The very first news that we're going to discuss is that the U.S. Air Force has confirmed finally that converting a luxury Boeing 747 jet gifted by Qatar into a new Air Force One for Donald Trump could cost hundreds of millions of dollars. Air Force Secretary Troy Mink estimated the retrofit would stay under $400 million, but several Democratic lawmakers believe the figure could exceed $1 billion.
Now, the aircraft in question is 13 years old and originally designed for high-end commercial use. It will now undergo major updates, including secure communications, missile defenses, and presidential-level security enhancements. Now, despite its age, the jet is considered a state-of-the-art Boeing 747-8 model, one of the most advanced long-range aircrafts available.
And the move has triggered sharp criticism on Capitol Hill. Legal and ethics experts have raised red flags over whether the jet's donation violates U.S. laws that restrict foreign gifts to prevent undue influence. Democrats in Congress are calling for greater transparency, warning of national security implications and possible breaches in protocol.
Now, Donald Trump defended the decision, calling it stupid to reject a perfectly modern presidential aircraft. Now, he also praised Qatar for the gesture, saying the jet meets all operational needs. Now, the current Air Force One fleet has already faced multiple delays and replacements not expected until at least 2027.
And the U.S. Air Force says much of the cost will align with pre-planned spending on training systems and spare parts. However, congressional hearings and legal reviews are expected to continue, potentially delaying retrofitting plans and creating funding roadblocks in the months ahead.
Honestly, Majid, I don't think I've ever heard a group of people complain this much about a gift in my life. But honestly, much more than that, you know what stands out to me? It's the fact that I just suddenly deeped this, that when Trump came to the Gulf, it's like there was something monumental that happened in AI in, you know, in Saudi Arabia and in the UAE. You know, he came to Saudi Arabia, they just launched a new artificial intelligence company, Humane, then, you know, partners with NVIDIA. Jensen Huang promises them 16,000 NVIDIA chips. You know, they go to the UAE, there's this, like, big news, we're going to build the largest data center outside of the U.S.
Yeah.
But then when Trump went to Qatar, it's like the biggest deal, I feel, that there was so much news around, it was this buying, you know, Qatar buying more than 200 Boeing planes in a $96 billion deal, and this gift for Donald Trump. And it honestly, like, it, I just sat there and I thought, okay, Saudi and the UAE, they're trying to advance in AI, and then you have Qatar where when you're hearing about the dealings, it's almost like It's actually the U.S. here that has more to benefit, which brings me to my question of how come we don't actually know what all these deals were made up of? Remember that number that was released by the White House? I think it was $1.2 trillion.
For Qatar, yeah.
We don't actually...
No, we have the deals. The problem with these deals, I won't go into the detail of what has been signed and whatnot, but the deals are between private companies. The problem is that no one wants to focus on them. Everyone is like, okay, Qatar is giving $1.2 trillion to U.S. over these years. But you, when anyone goes deep, the press release had all the dealings listed down, even the UAE ones, even the Saudi ones, and not the ones which went out of these Arab countries, but the White House press releases, they were very detailed. Obviously, when two countries make such big deals, when Trump, the businessman and president, a businessman turned president, what I call him, when he goes to a country, it's all going to be, oh, how much money did he bring in? No one cares how it comes. No one cares how which company is giving the biggest one or the smallest one. But we'll try to find all the deals. We'll try to make a carousel on them that these are the biggest
deals.
Exactly.
But yeah,
they were so undermined and overshadowed by just that, oh, Qatar is giving this much money.
Exactly. So, yeah. And this plane. So it's like, I feel like this entire story of Trump getting a big plane, how much it's going to cost to actually update it. Yeah. It's like, it's doing one thing, which is overshadowing whatever Qatar is trying to do. Because in my mind right now, I'm like, okay, so it's Saudi and the UAE who are trying to lead the AI race.
Yeah.
You know, but what is Qatar doing about it?
See, Qatar wants to come into the limelight. That's the main point for them right now, because UAE and Saudi are, like, at least right now, they're miles in front of them, in front of Qatar. But Qatar is very good in this sense that they have so much money. And even if they spend all of that money on, if they become a welfare state for all their nationals, it's like 250 or 300,000 people. But they have so much money that even if they spend all of it, they'll still be left with so much money. That is why they're looking for markets outside. That is why QIA, we know, has invested in XAI and OpenAI. They've invested literally everywhere. So the point being is they have money. They just want the business markets, all the world's markets, especially the US market, to look at them as a financier, as an investor. That is why I think this whole deal, I think it was a UAE-Saudi trip. Qatar got added. We saw Trump Towers being announced before he went to Qatar. So that was like an indication that, okay, he's going there not for only political and presidential and US reasons. He's also going for there for... He's planning life after his 4 years as president. So you have to look at all of it and realize that Qatar just wants to be in the room with the big guys.
That is
so that
true.
Is why all of this happened.
But not everyone is a big guy sometimes. Yeah. Like the investment into Builder AI didn't exactly go really well. So basically, Qatar Investment Authority, they invested, I believe it was $300 million
into
Builder AI. And they're also Microsoft backed. And just about now, they've announced insolvency. They've gone bankrupt.
Yeah.
You know, it really is really strange to me, because I'm taking a look at it and I'm like, okay, you have Microsoft involved. I believe also SoftBank was involved.
Yeah, everyone, whenever there is such a big... To be honest, I don't know if you've used Builder AI. I've tried it, not the paid version, but just the free one. I'm trying to get how to learn to make an app without a lot of coding. I have zero coding experience. Builder AI was one of the platforms that offered UI and basically user interface for websites and all of that. They were trying to go into apps. They went into apps. They didn't do good. But the only problem with them was apparently, reportedly, they're using humans instead of AIs on the back end. Then there's so many stories coming out now. And it's funny that all of these stories come out when someone is sinking. They never come out when someone is doing good. And that's my point. You remember Billabong? You remember Mazen Kanaan said a very nice thing?
Exactly.
That when someone is falling down, don't punch them.
Exactly.
Just be nice to them because they're falling down. Billabong came back, thankfully.
I think that's what he said. He was basically saying, how come all of this criticism you all had didn't come out when they were actually on the rise?
The context of it is, if someone is doing bad, if someone comes through a problem, Billabong came through the poisoning problem, Builder AI, so many things that now we're seeing that they didn't have the money, they were just hiring, they're this.
And what's so interesting is that their website, by the way, went down, and now it's back again.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that they're still hopeful. Do you know where the founders are from, Majid?
No idea.
I cannot tell.
American, most probably American
but
founders.
But they look South Asian, by the way.
Oh, nice. But, yeah, not going good. But QIA investment, one of their investment went bad. But a lot of their investments, the big thing is that these are like small pocket change investments, I would call them, that they do because they believe that, oh, maybe this will grow big. Builder AI promised a lot. They were valued at, I think, at least some millions of dollars. I don't remember the exact valuation. So they put their egg into a basket and they thought it would go big. It crashed, but they've done better in other places as well. They've invested in XAI, they invested in OpenAI, they invested literally wherever you see big names from UAE and Saudi, somehow they are there. So they're trying to come out. They're trying to become the big guys of the Middle East. They already are with the money that they have. Just in terms of investment, they are trying to go and invest into big things. And their QIA is, I think, $500 million. It's not at a billion. Sorry, $500 billion. It's not at a trillion. So let's see. Hopefully, QIA someday will be saying, oh, they bought this, they bought that. But yeah, talking about money, millions, Huda Beauty, one of the stars of the UAE, Dubai, and the Middle East, is marking Eid al-Adha and a major business milestone with the pledge to donate 1 million dirhams to charitable causes chosen by its community. That was the most interesting part for me. You choose. The announcement was shared across the Huda Beauty, Huda Hotline, and Huda Katan Instagram accounts, reaching millions of followers.
And so this brand has always been about more than beauty. It's about purpose, passion, and making an impact. And this was basically the official statement that was released. Now, as Majid said, followers were basically invited to comment with the causes, communities, or organizations they believe deserve the donation. You know, turning this entire social action into, you know, real social media engagement, I feel.
And among the responses, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency USA, that is UNRWA, USA, publicly nominated themselves to support Palestinian communities. The open call for suggestions reflects a growing trend, brands empowering their audiences to co-create the impact in moments of global and cultural significance.
Now, Huda Katan basically recently regained full ownership of Huda Beauty, the brand that she launched in 2013 that quickly became extremely famous. Now, she basically bought back the equity from TSG Consumer, which had acquired a minority stake in the company back in 2017, valuing it at over $1 billion. Now, basically what this donation does is it underscores the brand's renewed mission to blend beauty with social responsibility and, you know, to turn consumer engagement into real-world change.
It was really funny seeing the comments that you and RWA was like, us. Everyone was like, this cause.
I don't know why they feel like they would be chosen, especially with the fact that they're based in the U.S.
Yeah. So UNRWA has different country branches, but I think the main headquarters is in USA. The only problem that I see is that the whole comment that I read was that we're going to help Palestinian refugees which have moved to the U.S. or which have moved to that North American, American, South American region, because they handle all that region. So I don't know if they'll help Palestinians in Palestine and Gaza, where actual aid is needed right now. But they have a good mission. They're trying to settle the refugees which are there in the Northern Hemisphere, Northern American and South American Hemisphere. So it's nice to see them nominate themselves. It's a nice, bold move from them. But apart from that, what I saw was playgrounds for Palestine. There was another one. All of these people, they basically were nominated by people. So we'll see. Hopefully, I think they will choose a Palestinian cause. Now, if they'll divide the money into two causes, because there's a lot of causes, there's not just one cause, there's multiple causes that you can see which have been nominated a lot. So let's see, hopefully we'll find a good story there whenever they decide who the money is going to.
You know what was so interesting? My family friends, they sent it to me and they're like, do you think that it would be possible for her to choose Sudan due to the ongoing civil war
there's
there?
There's also a problem.
And it's like, I think that in this case, definitely she's going to choose the Palestinian cause. Yeah. It is the most famous cause in the world right now, and rightfully so. I with this entire thing, it's back to how, you know, the UN, based in the U.S., they nominated themselves. The reason why I specifically said, Majid, that they are not going to be chosen is because Majid recently published this really good story about how basically there's this company, McNally Capital, and they have a stake in this company called Safe Reach Solutions, SRS, which is run by a former CIA agent, And SRS owns this, is running a company called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. Now, the reason why the entire, the entire charity foundation, it was controversial is because apparently SRS uses armed American military veterans to guard aid trucks and distribution points in Gaza. And you know, when you take a look at how deep the web goes with McNally Capital, and you know, you think about the UN what's it called, US-based UN nominating itself. It's like, would you ever trust someone like that to take care of more than $270,000? Yeah. I would not.
The thing is, that story was very complicated. It was a very deep research. To be honest, for the first 10 minutes, I was reading the story again and again. I was like, okay, I have to make sense of it, what they're trying to say. It's a very long connection, but it's actually a connection. But you have to know about the context. The problem was that in Gaza, UNRWA was working, but Israel banned them. So UNRWA, the regional thing, they banned them. They were like, no, we're not going to let you come because you're supporting Hamas, you're providing aid to Hamas and this and that. There was a lot of reasons. Again, basically UNRWA was quoting the right numbers and Israel didn't want the people to know that this many kids and women have been killed. So they were trying to suppress them. And that was one of the reasons they banned them. Then Trump came up with a plan that, oh, this Gaza humanitarian thing, we are making it, it's American made, but we have no stake in it. Israel will have no stake in it, and America will have no stake in it. Now, when you look at this story, there is an American company, McNally Capital, which has a stake in that company, SRS, which is doing
the Gaza.
So eventually they make money out of it because literally, at the start of the process, you have to buy stuff, right? So you buy stuff, you pack it, and all that logistics and operations, they're carrying it out. They get money for it. So some American company is making money from the Gaza humanitarian aid that's going.
And I think what's interesting, it's they're arming them.
Yeah.
You know, they're arming the veterans who are in charge of GHF.
Yeah.
And I think what was more concerning is the fact that GHF, it's chosen by Israel specifically. Why would Israel go out of its way to choose one aid funding organization to specifically organize everything?
They would say no to UNRWA, which is like years and years, decades of experience of handling such a thing. And they would say yes to, according to them, an outsider, GHF. But the problem is now we know that there's American companies behind them.
And a company run by a former CIA agent.
And they are getting money out of it. So it's very dubious that they're allowing that company and not UNRWA, which has a history. UNRWA has worked with Rwanda as well. UNRWA has worked in Sudan as well. They still work there. They're like the torchbearers of whatever problematic situation there is in the world. They always are there. They're the first flag there which goes and helps them. They didn't allow them. Now we know why they allowed an American company and all that to carry out. But yeah, the main idea is that she's giving money. And soon we'll know who she is giving to the money. And we'll obviously tell you. Follow us on all socials. You'll know. And there's another good news coming out of UAE. It's a little crypto-based, but it's very UAE-first story. So that is why it's on business and crypto both. But Circle, the company behind the world's second largest stablecoin. If you don't know what a stablecoin is, it's basically pegged to any currency in the world. Right now, the best stablecoins in the world are pegged to the dollar. So $1 is equal to one USDT, one stablecoin. So that way, it's easier to do financial transactions. So apparently, the president of Circle says the UAE played a key role in helping US regulators craft digital asset policy frameworks, basically put all the rules in place. And President Heath Tarbert praised the UAE's proactive stance following Circle's IPO on the New York Stock Exchange, which raised over $1 billion and valued the company at $6.8 billion.
That is impressive. So Tarbert, a former top U.S. Treasury and CFTC official, said that while the world often looks to the U.S. for leadership, the U.S. has been turning to the UAE for crypto policy insight. Now, he commended Dubai and Abu Dhabi's regulators for being at the forefront, saying their input helped shape how Washington approaches stablecoin regulation.
And stablecoins like, unlike Bitcoin, the prices go up and down, stablecoins pegged to dollar. And now we have three stablecoins in the UAE which have been announced and they will be launched soon, which will be pegged to the dirham, are pegged to the fiat currencies like the dollar and offer low volatility so that it can be used very easily for financial transactions. Tarbert noted they provided a secure and efficient way to store and move money globally. He added that the UAE as a global remittance hub, because we have 90%, 85-90% overseas people, residents, they send money back home. So, yeah, it's a global remittance hub, stands to benefit from the safe, borderless nature of digital stablecoins.
Now, the UAE's digital finance scene is heating up. AE Coin, the first regulated UAE digital currency, is expected to launch soon. And in April, international holding company ADQ and FAB announced plans for a dirham-backed stablecoin regulated by the UAE Central Bank.
And Circle, which opened an Abu Dhabi unit last year, also partnered with Binance to enable local use of USDC. Tarbert says the UAE's role as a financial bridge between East and West shows how stablecoins could transform global finance quietly, securely, and efficiently. It was a very nice, interesting story that a guy who's listing his company, the president of Circle, on the New York Stock Exchange, comes out and tells the national, UAE told us how to do it. So it's very interesting to know that. And we've known this for a long time. UAE, the first country to have an AI minister. UAE, the first country to have VARA, Virtual Assets Regulatory Authority, which regulates your digital assets. So whenever you see a problem with anything related to coins, bitcoins, NFTs, anything which is digital assets, VARA also always jumps in, has regulations, rules set. So if you own Bitcoin, it's not a problem because it's legal in this country because of thanks to VARA. And VARA is also the world's first regulatory authority for digital assets. So the proactiveness of the UAE in such cases is so nice to see and being praised by worldwide leaders.
You know why it is? It actually takes a lot of people to get used to new things. Yeah. I think this is the simplest way you can possibly think about it because, you know, stablecoin, Bitcoin, these are all new things. They're new concepts. You know, I remember when I was listening to Al-Waleed bin Talal speak about Bitcoin, he was saying that he does not believe in it. Yeah, he does not believe in it and that, you know, he's not going to invest in it. And he even brought up J.P. Morgan. He was like, my friend J.P. Morgan does not believe in it either. And Al-Waleed bin Talal, he's a Saudi billionaire, richest in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And he's saying that. But then you have the UAE who's completely embracing all of these new things. And I think
they're bullish on coins.
They're bullish on cryptocurrency.
Yeah. The idea mainly is that someday there will come a point and there will 100% come a time. This is not a distant future. It's very near that someday everyone will be using cryptocurrency because we've gone to our phones already, right? Mm. You've already gone to your phone. You don't need physical cards. I do. I'm an old soul. I still don't believe in phones, cyber attacks. I'm very scared of being hacked on the phone. But I still use my physical card. But at least that's also touch. So technology is advancing so fast that we're already using our phones. Eventually, there will come a point that you'll have your cryptocurrency wallet now. So like you have your FAB card, any card, ADCB card on your phone, you just do this and whatever you do with it. I don't know. I have done it. But my wife usually does some buttons and it gets paid. But eventually, your wallet will be there and you'll be paying through your wallets. So you'll be paying through Tether and you'll go to a hotel and they'll be like, yeah, we accept Tether, we accept this, we accept Bitcoin, we accept this, this. And you'll just do the same that you do with your card. And it's not a distant future because I remember there was an event recently and Dubai Tourism head, we shared the video of him saying also that Dubai wants to become the first city in the world and then UAE, obviously the first country in the world, where now you will come to the hotels and pay with your crypto for all the services. So they're trying to enable, at least in hospitality and tourism places, crypto payments. So soon we'll see that in UAE. And then obviously when one country implements it, everyone has their eyes on you. They're like, oh, how is this working? Is it doing good? It's doing good. Let's do it now at our place. Mm. So one country just needs to take the initiative. The good thing with UAE is
I think they need to take an educational initiative too. Because
with Bitcoin and all that?
Yes, I do believe that. And I'll tell you why, Majid. Everywhere that I look, you know, you have these people who are telling you, I'm literally going to make you like a Bitcoin expert. Yeah. And I go on these like different sites and I open YouTube and it's so confusing. I think you're like the only person who probably explained it in the simplest way possible of, okay, if you want to do this in a safe way, you know, maybe check out an app like Sarwa, but it's all so confusing. And I think that the UAE will possibly at some point take lead on this the same way way that they've taken lead on artificial intelligence. The Crown Prince of Dubai, His Highness Sheikh Hamdan, he launched AI Week, and he didn't just do it as like this big conference that's happening for over for a week. He also applied it to schools, where they have to add in a lesson to actually teach kids artificial intelligence. So,
and then UAE also has like from grade 1 to grade 12, in at least the government schools, it's compulsory to have AI as a course. So you look at AI, that's big. You look at cryptocurrency, UAE, I think, has some magic sphere where they're looking at the future and they know that these two are going to be the biggest things in the world. And they already are, to be honest. Bitcoin price now, I remember Bitcoin became the fifth biggest asset in the world when Trump came and Bitcoin surged 209. That was the all-time high at that point. Now it has gone past 111. But I remember it became the biggest asset in the world at fourth place. And Google came down. So imagine Google's shares came down and Bitcoin beat it. So eventually there will come a point when Bitcoin will be the top. The basic thing, as Word said, that there is a lack of education. The best thing that you can do is take $10. I would. It's not financial advice, very clearly, but if you want to learn it, it's like using a camera. So if you look at the camera on photos and you just be like, okay, this is the button that you have to press, but you don't actually press the button, you won't know it. All the apps that are in the UAE, since it's legal, I can tell you that go to any app that you want. You go to Binance. Binance is very detailed, very visually confusing. Serva, I'm not supporting Serva. It's not financial or paid promotion, but I use Serva for the basics of basic transactions. So it's very simple. You see some coin and it's at $2, just buy it. So you buy one unit for $2. For example, the next day it goes to $4, sell it. You made $2. It's as easy as it is. The problem is with fluctuations. So it can happen. There is a very high chance you buy it for $2 and the next hour it goes to $0.
By the way, Sarah has a newsletter. They keep you informed. They send you an
Even
email.
On their app, they have so much news that you stay updated. Like, oh, this is happening. You don't need to move to a news one. You just can. The best one for me, if I want to look at it, and the world's biggest news source plus crypto source for what's happening is Coin Market Cap. Everyone loves it. Has such detailed graphics. Has historical data of over 10 years. So that's Coin Market Cap. But the best thing is, take $10 and invest into an app. Go. You don't have to buy the app. You just have to do KYC.
Yeah.
The process is very simple. You scan your Emirates ID, and that's it.
And I think with Sarwa, in the UAE, the reason why I would encourage use of it, because to me it feels like you know, supporting a local business. It's ran by these Lebanese founders, Mark Chahwan. He's from Lebanon. And, you know, I remember I was reading this LinkedIn post and he was saying that it was meant to be called Sarawati. But then he spoke to his mother and she said, no, call it Tharwa. And Tharwa basically means wealth in Arabic. But he said with the TH, it would have been ugly. So they kept it at Sarwa. But, you know, speaking of Lebanese people, we have a really interesting story with a link to them. So a new Financial Times investigation revealed that the Spanish fashion giant Inditex may have never fully actually intended to leave the Russian market. So how did this actually happen? So Inditex is the owner of global brands Zara, Bershka, Pull&Bear, and Stradivarius, sold its Russian operations in 2022 to a company called MixedR DMCC just months after suspending business due to Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
And MixedR DMCC is controlled by Lebanon's Daher family, who also own Dubai-based retail powerhouse Azadia Group. The report reveals that Inditex injected over 65 million euros into the business right before the sale, despite already writing off 120 million euros. This raises questions about whether the sale was a clean break or a carefully planned detour.
And soon after the acquisition, MixedR DMCC launched near identical fashion brands Mag, Dub, Ikru, and Violette inside former Zara stores. Like, imagine, they're using the same stores, they're using the same suppliers.
Just change the tag.
And it's crazy, and they're even using the same staff and even rehired the same photography teams used for Inditex's global campaigns.
And the funny thing is that, crucially, not funnily, crucially,
but it's documents, so funny.
Yeah, documents reviewed by the FT reveal that Inditex retains a no-cost operation to re-enter the Russian market through a franchise agreement should political conditions allow. This built-in clause signals the company's intent to return without the burden of rebuilding operations from scratch. So literally, MAAG, MAG, will again turn back to Zara and all those brands which they've made the copycats.
Now, the Daher-led Azadia Group, which operates Zara stores across the Middle East, was actually valued at over $1 billion back in 2018 after Dubai Holding actually purchased a minor stake in their company. Now, this deal is what, you know, made them come to the spotlight and reshaped how global brands are seen navigating geopolitics without fully cutting ties. Now, with this story, the reason why I'm specifically on my phone, Majid, is because, you know, when I wrote it, I was taking a look at the comment section, and there was this one person, Mehr Dad, okay, and he asked, don't get the message. You know, why is this important to be published?
Yeah, it's
and,
very
you
important.
Know, I'm just coming to answer your question over here. The reason why this is so important is because obviously, you know, you have Russia invading Ukraine. That is something extremely big. And you have all of these brands that come out together and they're like, you know, we're for the people. We support the people. We're going to leave Russia. We're going to exit. Meanwhile, you have them injecting so much cash into the business. You have them making these clauses that are like, okay, we can re-enter the market after it comes down. Because basically, the Financial Times investigation, it revealed, and I specifically focused on this wording, that after Inditex sold Zara's operations and everything to the Lebanese Al-Daher family, mixed RDMCC, when they sold it, they made a clause that specifically said they can basically operate Zara's franchise again if conditions permit.
Yeah,
that specifically there, if conditions permit. So I think with that wording there, we can see that, you know, for them coming back is about if Russia takes a different decisions. But at the same time, the story is so important because it just shows you how brands really operate. Yeah. That in the end of the day, while they may be for the people, it is always for the business. It is always for the, you know, for the logistics.
Russia is a big market. There's so many people. It's such a big geographical area. You can't exit it. To be honest, as a business person, if you don't have your morals and ethics in check, which a lot of businesses here do, thankfully, if you're such a big conglomerate that you're in every literal part of the world, you have to find a way. And this is Zara's way. Going through a side company, Daher family, telling them to buy nearly all of it and rebrand it and then put a clause there that the day everything is perfect, the day Russia is accepted in the international community,
the day conditions permit,
we'll just come back. So this is, to be honest, it's not one of the stories. It's happened over the world, across the globe, over decades.
It's just Zara has been caught in detail.
Thankfully to FT, they did a nice report. But I remember when the October 7 happened like 2 years ago, a lot of people boycotted all the big soda brands, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, this, that, blah, 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 blah. I specifically remember from Pakistan, and then we saw Palestine Cola come out. We saw so many companies
launch
their
cola. I saw
Aziz
drinking one.
Yeah.
I'm like, where'd you get that from?
So the idea was in Pakistan, I remember there was a story, we also did it on Smashy Business, very early times when I joined, that there is a version of Pepsi, there's like a product of Pepsi which discontinued like 10 years ago. They tried to bring a 7-Up plus lime flavor and they named it something, but then they relaunched it because people were boycotting Pepsi and local brands stepped up and made local products. But they relaunched that 10-year-old brand and it had zero idea that it's from Pepsi. Because even if you look at any product, you look at 7-Up or L1, in the corner it's all a PepsiCo product, right? Mm. On that one, they didn't do it. So it was clear, like, deviousness, like, okay, we won't tell them, otherwise this will also go out of business. So brands have this way of staying in the market without putting their logo on it. And it's very funny how they do it. Again, you have to keep your morals and ethics aside if you're a business like this and you want to stay in the markets. But if you are a moral and ethical business and you believe in, because legally it's allowed, to be honest. Legally, there is no problem. They just launched a brand and sent it into the market.
Sometimes, actually, morals and ethics can actually,
and they are very important.
They can affect your business, because I feel like a prime example of this.
Karma.
It's not even just karma. I think like a prime example of this is what happened in Sudan with Arabic gum. So Sudan is one of the largest suppliers of Arabic gum in the world. And that is the ingredient that they basically use in candies, in Coca-Cola, in all of these soft drinks and candy. And basically what happened, because of the ongoing civil war in Sudan, the supply has been affected and it has not been able to reach these companies.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know how the effect is clear, Majid? If you noticed, the price of these sodas has gone up. It has gone up. It now costs, I think, like 4 to 5 dirhams to actually get like a bottle of Coke.
Yeah.
So it's like
2, 2.5 maybe.
Exactly. Like, and now it's like 4 or 5 dirhams. Yeah. So when you actually think about it, it does affect you to not have morals and ethics, because you know, you would think that after the entire civil war there, these brands would stand to benefit, but they did not. They too lost something in that market, and that's you know, the Arabic Liban. And that's a wrap for today. Thank you so much for tuning into the Smashy Business Show. Make sure to follow us across all social media channels at Smashy Business, and stay ahead with our daily newsletter. You'll find the subscription link in the description.
This has been a Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. A big shout out to our 1.5 million monthly listeners. I think we may go down some points, maybe 1.4, because we were inactive for 4 days, but we're back. And if you're listening, please share the podcast if you like it. Please comment. Please send us feedback wherever you want. You can message us on all social channels wherever you are following us. We love to read feedbacks, and we would love for you to tell us. We got a feedback recently. Word told me. If you can quickly tell what the feedback was from the guy.
He was nice for the most part. He was
so
really nice for the most part.
We got feedback, and we love more feedback. So please send us feedback. And today is also the day for Smashy Sports Show. So tune in at 11 a.m. UAE time if you want to know what's happening in the world of sports. Take care. Have a great day. See you tomorrow.